You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. And today I am here with Kathy McPhillips, who's the Chief Growth Officer at the Marketing Artificial Intelligence Institute. Kathy, thank you so much for being here and being on our show.
You're welcome. It's just so nice to spend time with you after knowing you for so many years.
I was going to say, like, dear friend and dear guest and dear colleague, Kathy, I'm so thrilled to have you here. Obviously, this is the topic that is buzzing, especially in our industry. I mean, all industries, I should say. Before we dive into talking about AI, I wanted to ask you a question we ask all of our guests to start the episode. And that is what you think the biggest challenge facing women in the workplace today is. What do you think that biggest challenge is?
Well, I thought I would focus on one of my challenges. And that's
Love
imposter
it.
Syndrome.
Make it personal.
Yes. Imposter syndrome. I just feel like there's so many things that I'm doing that I always question myself. And whenever I see someone else speak on a topic similar, I'm like, it was just so good. And I couldn't have done that. But I'm like, yes, I could have. So it's just trying to get myself, after being in the industry for 30 years, to realize that I am good at what I'm doing. And I can tell everyone else like all these things. I need to just like take my own advice, which I'm horrible at doing. I give great advice that I don't take. So trying to get myself to just knock that down a little bit every single day.
Imposter syndrome is a big one that I definitely love to talk about this show and talk about how people kind of get past it. I think it's also, to hype you up even more. I mean, what we're talking about today, AI, it's like, I think a lot of people almost are imposters talking about this topic and you're not. So you can go out there and talk about this topic, I think, better than most people. So hopefully you will overcome that. But I totally get it. I think we all suffer from that. And I also just think in the age of like constantly online and having too much information from other people, it really can kind of trigger it even more. We're constantly absorbing other people's content and it can make us feel like we don't necessarily have the ability to go out and present it. So thank you for sharing that with us. Do you have any other advice for people, things you've done to help yourself overcome it? Or if you're still working on it, that's okay too.
I think hopefully I'll always be working on it. Like, I just don't want to ever get a little bit too big for my britches. You know what I mean? Like, I think I always need to keep improving. We can always be learning and always be growing. But I think how I've overcome it recently, I was just telling my mom this morning, actually, that how I'm working on my presentation for Content Marketing World that's about AI. And I'm working on another presentation. And I'm like, why am I comfortable talking about this? When I was at CMI, when I was talking about this other topics, I just didn't really, I wasn't really trusting myself. And I think part of it is just with age comes wisdom. And I think another part of it is that I really have a good story to tell right now that no one else is telling the way that I am. So my story is unique to me. My experiences are unique to me, and no one can be and I'm not an imposter of my own stories. Like they're true and they're right and they're valid and they are educational. So I think just the more I talk about it and the more I realize like, okay, and I'm not an expert, we're all learning this right now, but I do know that for this particular topic and this particular, my use case, I am an expert on it because it's my story. So I think that's helped me kind of get through that process a little bit.
And that's fabulous. A fabulous way to think about it. Thank you for sharing. I would love for you to talk about your journey, how you got where you are today, going back to even as far back as school, if you want to, but your internships, your jobs, different steps you took along the way that got you to the role that you are in right now.
My internship story, we'll talk about at the end of this, because that's a really horrible story.
Oh, no.
But I went to Ohio University. I was a journalism major, and I ended up there because, and if you've heard me talk before, you've heard the story where in high school, we had a paper to do on what we want to do when we grew up. And I said, I don't know, I'm 17 years old. So my English teacher said, what are your strengths? And I said, art and math. And she said, you can't be good at both of those things. I was like, well, I mean, I am. So she said, go to the library, take a personality quiz and see what job comes out. And advertising came out. And I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'll do. So I ended up going to journalism school because there was an advertising sequence in that program. And I had this professor who one day we were in this media planning class and she said, I answered a question and she's like, come talk to me after class. She's like, why are you, tell me about what you're planning on doing. Like, switch, I want to be your advisor. And I just, that was, that math brain was coming out in journalism school. She's like, I don't see that a whole lot. So I ended up being going in advertising, and she was in media planning. She's like, do what I did. She had worked at Kraft for 30 years prior to me meeting her, prior to her becoming a professor. So she just had really solid use cases and examples and stories to tell versus just a professor lecturing, which who are awesome, but just, this is what, that's what I needed. So I got on the media planning class, path out of college, worked at two agencies in Cleveland. And then I went off on my own in 1999 and had my own business because of family situation. I just had to get out of where I was. And I just grew, and when I left, I didn't plan on actually working for a bit. Just, I wanted to get, my son was in the hospital a few times. He's totally fine now, 25 and solid as a rock right now. But there was just a minute where I couldn't, it was just too hard to do both. So once I quit my job, people were calling me saying, will you work for me from home? And that was in 99. And I was like, oh, is that a thing? You know, so I built my own business. And then in 2012, I went to the Content Marketing Institute. I had met Joe on Twitter, of all places. And then, you know, 2.5 years ago, I was talking to my friend Paul about, you know, my next, what I was going to be doing next in my life. And he said, come work for me. So here I am.
Oh my gosh. I love that journey. It has like entrepreneurship, working from home before it was even a thing, Twitter, social media jobs. Yes. I'm like, you've done it all. You've had the whole thing. What is the role that you're doing now? I know that you've been there for a bit. And the space is continuing to change very rapidly, but you are the chief growth officer. What is that job?
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, my background is marketing and advertising. So when I was talking to Paul, he said, we should do something together. And it took us a few months to figure out what that was going to look like. Because at first he said marketing and I was like, okay, that's awesome. I could do that. But I don't know if that's big enough for what I want to be doing. And I want to have a say in some of the sales things, because sales and marketing should align more. At CMI, it was great, but there was the sales team and there was the marketing team. Like, why can't we be one cohesive unit? And then again, when I was at CMI, like, my big passion was community and growing our business through our community. So, you know, you have to have your KPIs and your revenue goals and all those things. You need to be able to tie what you're doing from a community standpoint to your sales. But I know that you can do the day-to-day stuff without being so focused on the numbers, but you're actually growing it through nurturing those relationships. And then when, like, it's content marketing, when those customers are ready to say, I want to go to an event, they're going to go to our event because our relationship is so strong. So I said, I want to bridge customer service and community with sales, with marketing. And I was on LinkedIn one day and I saw a growth role and I read the job description and I was like, that's what I want to do. So I cut and pasted it into an email. I'm like, Paul, this is what I want to do. And he's like, all right, let's do it. So that's how that came about. And so we have an AI Academy for marketers. We're a media and events and education company. So we've got the media arm, the blog posts, research, content, white papers, webinars, podcasts, all that stuff. Our education arm is, we have an AI Academy for marketers, that there are some free options, there are some paid options, et cetera, just of educational learning about AI for marketers. And our mission of the company is to make AI approachable and accessible to marketers. Just, what does it mean? What could I do? What should I be doing? What path should I be taking? So we have that journey for them at whatever stage they're in. And then the event, you know, the event, we have an in-person event once a year. Our fifth event is next fall. And then we are starting to intersperse some virtual events quarterly, just so we're not waiting 12 months, because as you know, this is just moving so quickly.
So fast. I mean, when we had a conversation a couple weeks ago and I was just like, whoa, your job must have taken off very rapidly and suddenly. I mean, I'm sure it was busy before, but, and this wasn't one of the questions we prepared you for, so sorry to put you on the spot, but as we're talking, I'm wondering, before we dive into really the AI of it all, because it's so fascinating, your job is just amazing and incredible. And I also love when people kind of create jobs for themselves. So they're like, this is what I want to do. This is the job. Like, let's work backwards. That's such a treat. What are maybe the top one or two questions? Like, what are the questions that you're getting about communications, marketing, and AI? Like, when people are coming to you or at these virtual events or panels or anything, like, kind of what are they asking? What are the major concerns?
It's really interesting that the questions that I get asked the most from the smartest marketers that I know is, how do I get started? And how do I find the time? So, I mean, I get it. You know, we're so busy with everything that we're doing. You're like, okay, you're going to carve out a few hours a week to learn about AI. You know, but then on the flip side, how can you not start thinking about it? So it's, and we kind of take them on this path of saying, identify where you have a use case, where you've got a problem, and then find a tool to help you, like you would do with any technology. So kind of take that AI, that negative connotation, that, you know, sci-fi thing out of it, and just realize all you're doing is buying different technology to help you and help you augment your job.
It's so interesting. Like, this reminds me, this time reminds me so much of when I was working in magazines and like the early days of social media, when everyone was like so overwhelmed by all the different social media channels and wanted to be everywhere. And we kind of came to the realization, like you're saying, is like, you might not have to be everywhere. Like, there are all these channels, there are audiences Correct. There, but you should be where it makes sense for your business, where you are actually going to reach your audience, like use it. And it just reminds me so much of that, like you just said. And I think it's like, use the tools that make sense, and not all of them are going to make sense for your business, which is, it's hard. It's overwhelming, but that is, it's interesting that you're getting that question and you are able to kind of distill it down to that.
Yeah. You know, we're talking with a few companies on helping them build an AI roadmap for these enterprise companies that they have this long plan, 6, 12, 9 months. And then some are just saying, I just need to write, you know, I just need help with social media. I'm the person, but I'm doing 10 other things. I need it. I know it's important for me to distribute my content, but I don't have time for that. And I feel like my awesome content is not being seen because I don't have the bandwidth to go and create my tweets, schedule everything, do all that stuff. And there's like, well, there's a tool that can help you do that. You know, so it's letting you focus on what you love and getting the stuff that needs to be done, get it done in a more efficient way for you. And that's just one little thing, but it saves you so much time and it helps your, you know, your ROI and everything else that you're doing.
Totally. And that's kind of how we've just been starting to think about, exactly like you're saying, like, where can it be helpful? And also reminding ourselves, like, there are certain things that we use that are AI already that we don't necessarily like call AI. Like, for example, this is such like a silly little one, but like Gmail writing my emails. Like, I had a realization a couple weeks ago. I was like, whoa, I am using AI, the predictive text. Like, it's not that overwhelming. I'm already using it, but it took me even to get there to not be overwhelmed and realize that I'm already in the world. So I love the Canva, baby steps.
Correct. And like Canva removing background images, that's AI. You know, transcriptions, that's AI. So you are using it and you may not even realize it.
Yes. Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff also people have been using for so long that like we didn't call AI. And then when the term exploded, right. I mean, that we're misclassifying things. So it helps me and hopefully helps our audience just kind of stay calm with these little baby steps and understanding that you're already using it. You know, those are some great examples. Like, what are some other ways that you see, again, maybe it's small, maybe it's big, like, where do you see AI kind of like revolutionizing our industry, marketing and communications? Like, where is it really already or on the path to helping communications professionals in this space?
I think there's so many opportunities for us to be augmenting what we're doing, either what we need to do faster or more efficiently, filling a knowledge gap. Like, one example is I'm producing our podcast. I'm not a podcast producer, but I'm using some tools that are helping me do some things that I otherwise wouldn't have had the knowledge to do. So there's that side of things. There's the side of, again, just distributing your content in a much faster way. You know, we have a podcast that's a news format. So that Paul and Mike record on Mondays. That needs to get out quick, because in a couple of days, especially with AI right now, things are going so quickly. I can't wait 2 days to get this podcast out. So I'm turning it around on a dime, and I can get that out in 2 hours with all my, with 4 blog posts written, with all the social media done, with video shorts created for YouTube shorts and TikTok and Instagram stories and all the places we want to get it out there, with the CTA to drive them back to the podcast, or podcast listenership is through the roof. So it's just, and data, you know, we have so much data right now, and we don't have the time. And in some cases, the knowledge to go through, like, how do we analyze it? What do we focus on? And with the help of AI, it's, you know, distilling that down to a point where we are like, okay, now we've got an analyzable, horrible word, set of data points that we can actually say we can make some strategic decisions on, because now we have this data in a form we can digest, where before it was just like, we have so much stuff. Where do we even start? And AI is also able to uncover some things that we may not even have thought about. You know, one example is if you are segmenting your email database and you want to send it to certain industries or certain job functions or something, because you know, you inherently know that this job function is more likely to appeal to this message than something else. Okay, right, valid. But if you use an AI tool, AI is seeing all the things that customer has already done, that and they're sending them content that you don't even realize that they want. So it's you're still doing the strategic planning of what messages are going to be out there, what you think they want, but AI is just kind of taking it from there. So it's just more effective. And then your customers are getting what they want, which, you know, in this world of all this content and data and everything, there's just so much stuff that now they're going to keep in touch with you more because they're like, okay, this email is always spot on versus, oh, there's, you know, every, you know, couple are good for me, but I just stay on because I don't want to unsubscribe. But this is, you know, doing it with AI with a little bit of assistance is giving them more of the content that they want.
Yeah, what I think is, I don't know if this is your experience, but with my own clients, the people I talk to, it's like right now it's extremely fear-based. Like people are very scared and overwhelmed. And when you're speaking, just like to think about AI as helpful and supportive of your business, I think is really a way to turn the thinking around. I'm also sure that a lot of people, when they're thinking AI, they're just like ChatGPT. Like ChatGPT, that's it. And to hear you speak about these other use cases, I think is so beneficial because knowing it can just help all different parts of your life and your business. It's not just like coming for your written content or whatever, you know, part of that fear is.
And it's interesting because on our team, four of us are journalism majors. We like writing. We don't use the tools to write our content. We use the tools in other ways. Maybe outlines, maybe, you know, a messy first draft, but even that, we're not even using it for that. Repurposing, cutting, you know, pulling some quotes for social images or other things, or using the transcript to do something else with it. But we're not using it to write our stuff. We're using it for the other things we don't love doing. You know, we love writing it, but we don't love like getting it out there,
right.
You know, but it's such a critical part of it. It has to get done, but now we can focus more on the things we do love doing.
I love that. I love thinking about it that way. Also like, and I've had fun with it, like ideation, like, you know, if it's just me coming up with ideas that I'd love to have a room of people coming up with ideas, but sometimes me and a robot can just have as much fun, like, you know, give me 10 ideas. And usually it's a good like thought starter or starting point, just having like a different quote unquote brain to do it. So I love that. But I think that is such a good, I'm so glad you're here talking about this, because I think that is such a good way to think about it. Because again, I think it's very scary and people think it's coming for their jobs, but I think to think about it as a support or help, or to do the things that you don't want to do, and you know, finding the different tools that will help you with that, which I know is another challenge, is just like a very exciting way to get into this world. You mentioned before, you know, the biggest question being, how do I get started? Like, what is, just to dive a little bit deeper into that, like, what is some of the advice about like really where to start? I mean, I know that you guys are doing a lot of really interesting strategies for businesses, and so it might be a much deeper question, but just in terms of the top level, like, what are the things I can do when I feel very overwhelmed and I know I need to enter this world? Like, what is that easy path?
So I think I start with, you know, what are some things you do on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis, a consistent basis? Is it what you're doing repetitive? Is it data-driven? Is it trying to make a prediction? If it's one, two, or three of those things, you probably have a use case for AI. So what we talk about a lot, we in a few courses, and then when Paul and, you know, when our team is out speaking, is we have this spreadsheet, just a rudimentary Google sheet, where you write down, okay, so say for my podcast, here's the 30 steps I take to do from, doing the, what's it called? The brief, podcast brief, all the way through to distributing everything and doing all the other stuff. Here's 30 things we do. And we write down, are we using any tech to do it, to use for any of those parts? And then is there a tool that can assist us with this? And then lastly, we say, what is the value if to intelligently automate this? So that could be a time savings. It could be getting it out faster. It could be, we can do more with this tool because we can, you know, just because it's faster for us. And then what's our ability to intelligently automate it? So we rank it 1 through 5. And again, it's just a very simple, but just getting it out of our heads onto paper. You try to see where the fives are. Is the value high? And is the ability for us to execute it high? And start there. You know, we might think, okay, writing our social is a really easy thing for us to do. Great. Is it going to move the needle? Maybe, but it's not like a five. So what are the fives? So that's the place you should start. And then work your way down the list. So rather than trying to institute 10 tools at one time, onboard 10 tools at one time, which sounds horrible, you know, focus on that one thing. And maybe if you find that one thing and you're saying, we're going to get a ChatGPT, a GPT-4 Pro license, what else within the organization can that be assisting us with? So, you know, ops could use ChatGPT, finance could use ChatGPT. So like, are there other use cases within your organization? Are you getting your tech team and your IT team involved? Do they know what you're doing? Then you get into the whole side of, are we allowed to be using this? Are we throwing our data in there? Are we throwing any PII or IP in there that we shouldn't be doing? So then there's those conversations about, okay, what am I able to use this for? So things like us using it to cut and paste a blog post into there and say, help us write some social, or help me write a short blurb for our email. That's okay because it's our content we're putting into this. So there's just a lot of, you know, we're all just learning as we're going along right now, but there's a lot of thinking about the different path, you know, the path you should be taking, and then where it's okay just to, you know, you can use it versus, wait a minute, this is giving me pause. I better call someone on the team just to make sure that it's okay.
Totally. And I mean, I love that just like actionable plan to even start. I'm like curiously taking notes in my head, and we'll listen back to this 10 times to advance my own business. But what about with finding the tools? Like, I know as a person working in the marketing field, I get lots of emails now and pitches about different tools, and it's kind of hard to distill what's good, what's bad, what I actually need, like, and also just even kind of how to even know what's out there that can even help me. I mean, I know you guys are doing a lot of education around that. How can people working in the communications field find out what the AI tools even are?
Right. So I would start either on our website, marketingaiinstitute.com, or Google, and type in AI and press releases, AI and blog posts, AI and content marketing. Whatever you're trying to see if there's a use case, a tool that could help you for a particular use case, you can, you know, start there. I think G2 is really starting now. If you say I'm using this to help me write, what are some other tools? I think that'll get to a point where you'll be able to use G2 for that sort of thing. But I would even consider going to some of the tools you're already using, going to your customer success manager at that company and saying, is there something that we're not taking advantage of? Because maybe you're paying for something, you don't even realize that there is this arm of the tech that you're not even taking advantage of. You also could look at, you know, Microsoft and Google, and all these tools now are starting to bring AI into the Microsoft suite. Many of us have that. So what's coming up on their pipeline, or not pipeline, but on the roadmap that we could be, should we just wait a minute? Or should we go try out one of these tools for a few weeks just to see if the use case actually is worth it? And then what's next? So yeah, it's an interesting time right now, because 6 months ago we would have just said, you know, just start with these smaller tools and dive in. And now it's like, when's the other stuff coming down? So, and at this point, I would say still keep trying the individual tools for the individual use cases, because at least if nothing else, it's giving you an idea of how to use them, and because they are very similar. So you just kind of got to jump in and just try them out, because some UXs are better than others. And maybe they're all the same level, but I like one because I've just used it more. And sometimes I might like that output more. I actually open Google Bard, Claude, ChatGPT at the same time. And I'll put the same prompt into all of them and just see what the output is, to see which one is resonating with me the most for that particular project. And it's interesting because oftentimes it's not the same one. If I use it one day for one thing, I use it the next day for something else. It's not the same tech that's actually giving me what I want. And that could be my horrible prompt. It could be that they each have their own unique niche on what they're really good at giving information on. So I use a lot of them just to play around with and test.
I love that. Well, it's great to have the tools. Like, these tools are accessible to us. We can use them. And so that is just like the first step. Something else we did at Masthead Media is I was just reading that a lot of agencies are doing this. I didn't even know it, but I'm glad that this seems to be working, is we started an AI task force. So once a month, we have different stakeholders across our company just meeting to talk about AI. Like, what are our projects? What should we be doing? What tools are out there? How has the landscape changed? And it's just like, I mean, this is what you live every day, but it is so almost crazy to, like, from one month to another, how much the landscape will have changed and what the tools are. And I mean, keeping up with it, we know feels very, very hard. But to take that time that's like carved out, we're using it in our day jobs every single day and with our clients and making sure that, especially as we like do strategic planning for next year, absolutely, like, everything is going to touch AI and we're going to be thinking about, you know, the new search and everything. But that's been something that's been really helpful, to like take that time away, just to dedicate it to talk about it, and then kind of everyone go do their projects, figure out their things, like, but it's been a helpful tool for us. And I'll definitely bring some of the learnings I have today to that task force. So thank you for helping us.
Yeah. So Jessica Rhea, who I introduced you to, she works at VMware, and they have an AI council. So similar to your task force. So I think, you know, if someone's thinking about that, look at what VMware is doing, look at what Masthead's doing, look at what people are writing about, because people are starting to share their stories and be very open about it online. If you're in a community, ask people in your community, have you tried doing this? Who in your team is on this? I think it'll vary by organization, and it'll vary by job level. You know, at VMware, one of the people on the council is like a new hire, fresh out of college, but she is so excited about it. So it's going to take all of us to figure this out together, which I think is really cool.
Absolutely. I love that. I love including like just different people across the company, and we're all hearing different things, and we're realizing we're all reading different things. So even just coming in and being like, did you read this? Or that's contradicting what I read. I mean, that's been really helpful as well. And I think what you said about case studies, like at this point in it, what I've been really focused on is like case studies. How are people actually using it? Again, because it feels so overwhelming to me to be like, oh my God, we could do anything. We should do everything, everything. And I think that case studies just like, okay, how are people really doing this? How are they actually using AI? What are they learning? That also has felt like a less overwhelming and just more like real down to earth way to think about it versus like pie in the sky. We could be doing anything. So I think that's been helpful as well. Something you mentioned before, I think is really important to talk about. We're talking about AI is like the concerns around it. And I mean, this has been another conversation just about like being careful and copyright. Like, what are some of the bigger concerns? You started to talk about them earlier about like using AI, and what should you be looking out for? If we could dive a little bit deeper into that, because I think it's really important. Like, I know working with our legal team, it's basically come out that like most of our clients can't really use AI created content. And so we're looking for other ways that they can use it because of copyright issues. Like, what are some of those key issues?
Yeah, the copyright thing is a big deal. You know, if there is something that you would like to make sure is your owned content, like a blog post, like your website copy, I would not use AI to help you write that content. The way that copyright law reads today, and it was written in like the 1800s, was it needs to be essentially human created, and AI, say you write a blog post using ChatGPT or any of these tools, and you change 51% of it. The way the law reads today is, sidebar, I'm not a lawyer, so do not take what I'm saying.
Me neither, but I advise on AI law all the time, so don't worry, go for it.
So this is me as a practitioner, how I believe this to read is that if you change 51%, the 51% of the words that the words that you change, you can copyright. The rest of it, you cannot. Which is part of the reason why our team does not use it to write our blog content and our website content and our big pillar content pieces. I'm not going to copyright a tweet. I'm not going to copyright a sales email, things like that. I use Dolly or Midjourney to create some blog post hero images where I might have been previously used stock photography. And I'm doing that because I am not the creative director on our team. We don't have a creative director on the team. So I'm using some of those tools. And I know that if someone comes and takes my image off my website and says they want to use it, I don't have a leg to stand on, but that's okay. It's like my blog post image. So I don't care that much. So it's like, do that cost benefit analysis of I need this quickly versus I need to own this. And that might change down the road. I feel like things are going to be backed up in the legal system for years and years. So just kind of doing right by your customers and by your company, I think is really important for us to be those stewards versus just saying, well, it's legal or it's not illegal. Like that's not a good way to really think about things. And then as far as like the data and what you're putting into these tools, even if it's just copy you're putting into these tools of things that are some your IP, that's what gives me a little bit of pause. You know, read the fine print on these tools and make sure that you know that what you're putting in there is safe. There are tools like Writer that now have, they're HIPAA compliant. So if you're in the medical industry and you are putting some things in there that I don't know all the ins and outs of that. I don't know how that's possible or what that even means, aside I know what HIPAA means, but I don't know how that works. So, but trying to find the tools that are thinking about that, and they're all getting to that point now where they're going to need to be worrying about that, because that's giving a lot of people a lot of pause saying, we can't even touch this. Where like, it's like, yes, you can, but you just need to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. So partnering with the companies that are thinking about the protection of data and customers and companies is really important.
I think it's really helpful even just to like say those things out mm-hmm. loud, because I mean, I know sometimes you're hearing this, but the conversation around using AI seems to me to be much bigger than the conversation around the concerns of maybe when you shouldn't right. use it. So it's like, right. you know, when we started having these conversations, we're like, oh, wow, like I said before, we really can't use it or shouldn't be using it for X, Y, and Z client or any content creation because they're not owning it. And like you said, I think it'll evolve over the years, but not for a while. So I think it's really, really important to be aware of those things. I want to get into some of our fun career chat part of this podcast. But before we do, any other words of advice or thoughts for kind of communications professionals who are looking to, you know, embrace AI or present themselves differently in the job market or prepare for the future job market? Anything else we should be doing, you know, that you think that communications professionals should just know about?
Yeah, I think if you're already testing, I would say just keep testing and, you know, be able to show some type of measurement so you can go to your team, to your management, to whomever, to yourself, even if you're the one that's deciding on budgets and technology, trying to, you know, find a use case, find a KPI you can measure, show the results, and then just say, okay, now what can we do? What else can we do? Just to keep moving down that path, because at some point AI tech is just going to be tech. So we just need to make sure that we're staying alongside this as it all grows. If you're reluctant, I guess I would just say start with something maybe in your personal life. Like go to ChatGPT and throw in there, I'm trying to make a recipe. Can you help me? You know, I have this, and this. Can you give me a recipe? I'm trying to create a playlist for my daughter's birthday party. I mean, just anything you're trying to think of, like see what it can do for you. Don't even use it for work. But then once you can kind of see what's possible, and then say, okay, I'll just try it for one small project and just see what it'll give you. Because I think that, you know, we just need to make sure that we're reskilling, we're upskilling what we're doing, we're reskilling what we're doing, because the tech's not going to go away. It's just making sure that we are protecting ourselves and our careers and our jobs by how is this going to augment what we're doing? How is it going to take away some things that I'm doing? And what does that mean for my extra time? What else could I be doing? Could I be being more strategic, more creative? Could I be developing a new product for our company? Like what are the things that we could be doing to help us protect ourselves? And I don't think AI is going to take away jobs. It's going to take away a lot of the things that we're doing. So making sure that we're just protecting ourselves and our team members. Like we just hired two new people. Yay. And
congratulations.
We went through their jobs descriptions before we interviewed them, before we posted the jobs, to make sure that nothing in those, you know, those bullet points in the job listings were going to be something that maybe AI could take away in the next couple of years. So we don't want to hire people to then not need them. So we made sure that we were going to make sure that this was a job that they were going to have for as long as they wanted it.
I love that. And it's just such advanced thinking. And there's so many things you just said that are like, I want to put them on a t-shirt. Like AI tech is going to become just tech. But really, one thing that is rarely talked about is like, start using AI in your personal life. Like that is really where maybe, especially as like a busy person, you could really see the benefits of it and take away some of that fear. So I absolutely like love that advice, and we'll take it and we'll start doing it and we'll let you know what what recipes I find.
And it's interesting because I actually did that. I did that when we were going on vacation. I'm like, I have this and this in my fridge. What can I make? Cause I don't want to throw it away. And it didn't send me to Google. It gave me a recipe. So I didn't even need to go through scour through 10 links and to find something. It gave me the answer and it was fine. It was not the best food. It was edible.
But you didn't have food waste. So, you know, won in the end.
I didn't have to spend a lot of time trying to find something. It just told me what to do.
Oh my gosh. No, I think that's a great way. Like I used to help someone start, they were looking for like ideas for their business, business name ideas. And so I was like, oh, you know who I think be very helpful with this is ChatGPT. Like, you know, where do you want it to be related to? Like the city that you're in. And it was really fun. And that brainstorming, not for my business, but it was for someone else's business. But that was a really fun use case of like you said, birthday party themes could be great. Playlists are a great idea. Like I definitely want to start incorporating it. Just thinking about ways to make my life easier. If we can rebrand it as that, then I think it feels a lot less scary.
So my favorite use case right now with ChatGPT is fixing my Excel formulas. I go in and I say, I'm trying to do this and here's my formula. What's wrong? And it'll tell me the answer. I mean, I feel bad because my dad was my old source. So I need to call my dad more often just for other reasons. But it's like, you're missing a comma right here. I'm like, why are commas even in formulas? That's a whole different podcast.
Wow. But
it's just like, it's fixing those things for me that I would have spent, you know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes in Google trying to figure out someone else who had the same problem, what their answer was, where ChatGPT just does it for me.
That's great. That's fabulous. And I'm terrible with Excel formulas. So I'm like, okay, noted. I mean, maybe I can even start getting at all good with them by just looking it up or asking ChatGPT. But that, I mean, it really is like, even just this, the takeaways from this episode, it's like reframing the thinking around like, okay, when I need help, and I would usually, you know, for certain things, I'll still want to read the article and get the content. And I know the big conversation around perspectives, like those are going to be so much more valuable, like actually having the expert insights. But right, if it's like the answer would be just like an article written by AI potentially on Google, like using ChatGPT seems like an easier path for all of us. Right. So I'm going to ask you some of our classically annoying interview questions. So this is a career advice podcast, and what we love to do is talk to our guests who are usually at this point in their career interviewing a lot of people, maybe have not interviewed for a job in a while, and we like to ask them the questions that you're typically getting asked on interviews. What I'd like to say is you can either answer these like how you genuinely want to answer them, or you could answer it how you think people should answer them, because they're all kind of trick questions. And the interviewer is most likely looking for a specific answer. So feel free to go either way. But the first question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Would it be bad if I told you when you sent me this question, I was like, retired?
But no, that would be great. I think we're all like, yeah, go for it. Are you kidding? I love that answer.
No, I don't, you know, I wouldn't have told you I'd be where I am right now a year ago. You know, we've been I was at the start of the job 2.5 years ago. And it was like slow and steady and it was good. And then all of a sudden, ChatGPT, November 30th, 2022, it was just like, what just happened? So I can't tell you what I'm going to be doing next year. I mean, I'll be with the company, but I don't know what it looks like in 5 years. It's very interesting. We're talking a lot about now that we're at this, hopefully not the peak, but we're at a really good place right now. And like, what's next? Because is this sustainable? Is it still needed in 2 years? Is it, I don't know. So I don't know the answer to that question. Hopefully still doing something of this and, you know, related to this, because I really think I found a good sweet spot with me, with my marketing side, my, you know, creative side, but also like, I just like being at the forefront of just this excitement, you know, and I'm not ready for that to stop.
I know you're like in the middle of it all. It is so amazing. I mean, one of my, I'm sure that listeners are very bored of me saying this because I feel like I tell the story all the time, but one of my favorite things is I went to a high school graduation and the speaker said basically like, the jobs that you will have don't exist yet, like to the high school graduates, like the jobs that you, not all of you, obviously there's going to be jobs that exist, but some of you, the jobs that you will have don't exist yet. And for me, that's so true. Like I, especially when I was working in like digital, exclusively digital magazines, like that did not exist when I was in high school. And I feel like this is a great example of that, of like that, this is a job, you know, there's gonna be so many jobs, even as we're talking, thinking about how like social media editor has become such a career. It's not just like, oh, the intern does social media, right? That's the joke. Right. But like, it is a career and there are executives who work in the social media space and whole companies built upon it. I feel like this is the path for AI. And I mean, our own jobs are going to evolve, but right, like your job and other jobs are going to just come out of nowhere, be created out of this. So it's a, it is exciting. And if you were interviewing for a job, that's what you just said, I think would be perfect because like, who knows? And you have been made,
right.
You have made great decisions along the way to get you just, to get you where you are.
It's just crazy. I'm like, I like literally been working for 30 years and it's like, I feel like I've taken a very linear path with my career, but then if I look at it, I'm like, no, I actually haven't. And that maybe it's just marketing has changed so much or, you know, whatever, but I'm like, it's, I'm doing such a different thing than what I was trained to do.
Yeah.
Which
but
is
I think
actually
that's one
fine.
Of the, right. I think it's one of the most exciting career journeys is like, and to go back almost to the beginning to imposter syndrome, like you go, you're in a space that you are comfortable with, like marketing, but in topics and worlds that maybe you're like a little uncomfortable with. So like you have the skills and you really do, but the topic might be different or like some of the tools might be different. So you kind of exciting to continue to learn. I think it's a really a thrilling career journey.
And honestly, like when I started, you know, I worked in agencies. I worked for CMI, like my product, I was always marketing or advertising a product. So when I came to the Institute, my product was our event, our online academy. And this is like one of those hair club for men things. I mean, I'm like, I'm your customer. Like I'm who's should be using this stuff. And I'm realizing more and more how much all this stuff is actually helping me do my job better while I'm promoting all our products.
Absolutely. Right. No, it's great.
I just used hair club for men in a podcast episode.
Do people know what that is? I do. I know. I know. Not only am I the president, but I'm also a member of Hair Club for Men. Yeah. And in fact, actually, I'm pretty sure that the name of that guy is David Sperling because that's my mom's maiden name. So I'll always remember the Hair Club for Men. No relation. If you could be doing any job, if you could choose a different career that was just completely separate from marketing, what would it be?
I probably would go either into nutrition or functional medicine, which are related to a degree. I've gone down this journey for the past 20 plus years on like trying to find like the root of my gut health, my, you know, all these things. Like I'm just obsessed with it. And I go to this woman it depends on how I feel at the time, but this functional medicine woman in Cleveland. And she's always like, you're the best patient because you actually do what I'm telling you. And I'm like, I just love learning all this stuff. And I love when I do one thing that something feels better, you know? So yes, that's 100% what I would do.
Fabulous. That's a great,
yeah.
Also a great answer. You're hired. The last interview question is, what would you do if you won the lottery today and you had a extremely significant sum of money coming your way? What would you do?
I currently have 28 nieces and nephews, I would pay for them all to do college or whatever they wanted to do next.
That's the best answer. I love that. 28. Wow.
Yeah. And like still more to come.
That's impressive. That's an impressive number. Very generous. Very, very generous. I love, love, love that answer. I do not want to end our time before I hear about your internship story. I know we were going to ask you the best job you ever had, the worst job you ever had, but let's start with the internship. And I think that unfortunately we'll have to wrap up, but I need to know and I need you to share.
So when I was at OU, we needed an internship to graduate and it was like 2 credit hours, but you had to work somewhere. So I went, I'm like, I don't know what to do. I applied all these places, didn't get an internship. And someone was like, go down to the learning center and read this. There's a binder of, this is way before computers, there was a bind, there's just a binder of people saying, calling into the school and saying, we've got an internship available if you have a student looking. So I'm flipping, and I saw Cleveland, and I was like, perfect, I'll just apply to this one. And the woman was like, oh, thank God, you're hired. Before I even like said who I was, she's like, we just need somebody. I'm like, okay. So I would drive there, it was unpaid. I drove there every day for an entire summer. It was a magazine, it was an IT magazine that, I don't even know what to say about it. By the end of my internship, I basically was writing, designing, laying out, publishing. I was doing everything. And then one day I went, they didn't pay me. I'm like, if you could just pay me like gas money, that would be great, because I'm not getting paid anything for an entire summer. So I had to get a second job. But I was, and then one day I went and they were shut down. They were just went out of business.
like you went to the office and like no one was there.
That was it. And all I was like, can you please just sign this form saying I did this so I can graduate? And I'm not even sure how it ended, but somehow I graduated. But it was horrible. So I recently found a copy of the magazine in like my box of treasures that, you know, we have of all our birthday, you know, all our old stuff. And I found the magazine and I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm flipping through it. And I was like, this is legitimately awful. Like I'm using clip art. It was just so bad. And then I look at the back of it where there's the subscription, you know, sticker. My grandpa subscribed to it, which I thought was like the funniest thing in the whole entire world.
But he must have given it to me. Because you worked there or because?
Yeah, 100%, okay. Because I worked there.
I was like, because he already subscribed to that magazine?
No, he didn't. My carpenter grandfather did not just subscribe to the crappy IT magazine.
Do you think they brought you in as just like to try to save the day? Like, what do you think happened there in retrospect? What do you think happened there?
I think the woman that hired me just wanted someone with a little bit of normalcy to help her out with some things. Now, the upside of that is that when I graduated and I was looking for my first full-time job, she reached out to me and said, I'm quitting my job. Do you want it? So I got my first job through the crappy internship. So it all worked. Somehow it all works out.
Oh my God. That is like the best note to end this episode on, because it's like, all we talk about is networking and mentoring and relationships. Like those are going to be what get you through your career. And that is like the perfect story that even this thing that felt I don't even know what.
Yeah. What?
I know. I'm like, did they, like, was it a front? Like, what happened? Who was running it before? I have so many questions about that particular magazine. But also probably the experience you got there was very valuable. If you were doing all of that as a college student, it feels like you learned a lot.
I guess I did. I don't even remember. I think I blocked out that portion of my life.
It was a little bit traumatic. Yeah. Well, Kathy, thank you. I mean, this, I could talk to you for hours and hours, and
I know that went so fast.
It flies. It flew. I was like, oh, like looked earlier at the time. I'm like, oh, we have plenty of time. And I looked, I'm like, oh my gosh, time to wrap. I can't believe it. But where do you like to connect with people? If people want to connect with you, is it on social media? Is it LinkedIn? Like where's the best way to connect with you?
Definitely LinkedIn. Easy to find on LinkedIn. If you have any AI questions, our website, Marketing AI Institute, has tons of free resources. And it's a great place to just get started and learn about some use cases. There's some research and free webinars. And we've got a free intro to AI class that's like 30 minutes of Paul, our CEO, talking, and 30 minutes of he and I going through questions from people that are attending. And I love it. We've done it 28 times. And every single time people ask different questions, and especially with the pace of things changing. So I learned something new every week. It's really fun.
Awesome. Yeah. My whole team is actually going to be taking that class. And I would say I would recommend Marketing AI Institute to anyone. I mean, you guys have such amazing resources. I've been seeing, you know, the upcoming events and the panels. And I just think it feels very like digestible, which as per this conversation in the overwhelming world of AI, I so appreciate everything that you guys are doing to help our field understand what is to come. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you
so
for joining us. It was so fun. I really appreciated you having you on. Thank you so, so much for your time.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast. Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.